Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
DinnerBellCorinth.com has the best food in Corinth, Mississippi. Awarded best salad bar, best steakhouse, best overall restaurant, and best lunch and dinner under $10. You can't beat it. For delicious food at affordable prices, order online. Visit DinnerBellCorinth.com.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert is on the air. Middays with Gerard Gibbert is powered by CSpire. Power your home or business with CSpire fiber. To learn more, visit supertalk.fm/CSpire. CSpire fiber powers Super Talk Mississippi. Get ready. Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Hey there, how y'all doing? My name is Scott Sand, sitting in for Gerard today. It's always an honor to be asked to fill in and guest host here on Super Talk Mississippi. Just to refresh your memory, if you care, who am I? You may know who I am. It's been a few times that I've sat in for Gerard or for Richard. I did radio in Mississippi for 10 and 15 years off and on the coast and in Hattiesburg. So it's fun to be back here, and we've got a lot to cover today. Rhino, how are you on this Monday?
Oh, not too terribly bad. Just didn't feel like there was quite enough time in the weekend.
Never does. It never seems like there is enough time. I enjoyed yesterday because I sat around and watched Scotty Scheffler golf. How could he hit? He was 31 under for the tournament. The, what was it? The CJ Cup tournament. I don't even know what golf tournament was on. I love to play golf. I'm really bad. I will tee up the ball in the middle of the fairway, which is a serious breach of etiquette, but my drives maybe go 75, 100 yards. I love to play, go out, smoke cigars, have a cocktail with friends, and have it considered a sport. So I do enjoy the game, but I'm just really bad, and I've never improved. It's been 30 years, and I haven't gotten any better. But golf on a Sunday afternoon, on the couch with the cat, taking naps is like the best way to live, in my opinion.
Well, we did have a Formula One race in the afternoon for once. It was the Miami Grand Prix. That was entertaining to watch. Not quite as entertaining as the sprint on Saturday, because that was just madness for when they were actually running.
So I never understood F1 racing. It seems more like a parade to me than like a NASCAR race or even an IndyCar race. It just seems like whoever gets the pole is going to win the race. And that may not be the case all of the time. You can have mechanical issues, but it just seems like there's no passing, there's no excitement in an F1 race.
That's why the sprint race was a better race to watch, because there were crashes, there were mechanical problems, there were elbows out racing, which is nothing new for NASCAR fans, because in NASCAR, rubbing is racing, but in Formula One, you're not really supposed to touch the cars because they're open wheel, and they can cause a puncture really easy. But you're right, there are several courses.
It sounds
the calendar
like you're a fan of the open wheel racing. Is there? I lived in Indianapolis for about 10 years, and I still don't understand the difference between Formula One and the Indy cars, because they're very similar, I believe.
Similar from the standpoint of there is a certain set of rules that they have to follow, but in Formula One, every manufacturer has to make their own car within those rules. They're allowed to buy from other teams a certain amount of parts. And they're allowed to buy third-party stuff if they don't want to build, but they have to design their own car within the specs, within the formula. That's the Formula One. Indy is everybody gets the same car. How can you tune the most out of that same car?
So that's more like stock car racing. That's more like NASCAR.
Kind of. It's like if Formula One and NASCAR had a love child, it would be Indy at this point.
It would be the Indy car race. I've been to the Indy 500 a few times. That's the only Indy race I've been to, and you got 500,000 people in like a 2.5 square mile area, and it's a remarkable experience, and it's fun to watch. I enjoy going to NASCAR races as well, although it's been a while. But it's hard to watch. I'll tune in for the beginning. I catch a caution lap, and the last five laps are usually the exciting part of the race.
Yeah, it feels like NASCAR has been trying to recapture the excitement and the competition that was available in the 80s and the 90s up to the early 2000s.
Some feuds, kind of like WWE. You want the rivalries to exist a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
You don't see those fights breaking out and the jockeys at the Kentucky Derby, which was also this weekend and has been called, what, the most exciting 2.5 minutes in sports. Did you have any bets? Of course, maybe friendly wagers in Mississippi. Did you have any bets on the Derby?
No, I didn't even tune in for it, although I did see the replay, and wow, that was a muddy track.
It was very muddy. The one time I've been to the Derby, it was just as muddy. I think I threw my clothes away after being in the infield. Sovereignty won, beating out Journalism. Baeza came in third, which I think was a last-minute addition. Some weird stats. Like, every horse in the Derby this year was somehow a descendant of Secretariat. And this morning on social media, I saw some of the pictures from Secretariat's Derby race where that horse, where Secretariat won by 31 lengths, like just completely outpaced the field. And you win a race like that, and you're going to live a very nice life as a horse. I had a mint julep on Saturday, as is tradition, and made a couple of bets, of course, with sitting around with friends. You know, you do the random name pulled out of a hat for $5 and do like football squares with horses based on their gait numbers. Didn't win any of that, but I did place a trifecta box and missed by one. I had Sovereignty and Journalism in the trifecta, but I had Burnham Square instead of Baeza. So that $1 could have won me about 70. Instead, I just threw away another dollar. Not really a bad day. It's still fun to watch. It could have been much worse. Not really how I planned to start the show, but getting all of the some of the sports stuff out of the way. A lot of baseball action. Bulldogs swept Kentucky. Ole Miss, I think, lost their series to Oklahoma. Southern Miss swept Arkansas State. So good weekend for baseball. There's only a couple of weeks left in the college baseball season, if I'm not mistaken. I don't follow that as closely as I do college basketball and March Madness, or college football and March Madness. This afternoon, Stephen McCraney will join us. He's the executive director of the Mississippi Emergency Management Agency. It's Hurricane Preparedness Week. We'll also talk about response from FEMA to the tornadoes a few weeks ago. Sean Tindall will join us next hour from the Department of Public Safety. Real ID is required starting Wednesday. Have you gotten yours yet, Rhino?
I think so. I think I got the little star on my ID. I'll have to double check.
I've gone to try to get mine, and I had one missing piece of paperwork, so it's been kind of a pain. If you're going to fly, you're going to need that, and we'll explain why.
Yeah, I got
next hour
star.
Also a look at the conclave, which also begins Wednesday. Bishop Joseph Kopasz from the Diocese of Jackson will join us next hour. And a few other stories. Of course, I heard Richard earlier this morning talking about the president's tweet on reopening Alcatraz and the other social media controversy from the weekend. As we talk about the conclave, his tweets as Pope, saying that he would love to be the next Pope, of course, saying that in jest. And, of course, when the president makes a joke, some people on the left get a little upset sometimes. We'll get into some of that reaction and the latest odds on who the next Pope will be. Meanwhile, I saw this all over the place over the weekend on X and on Facebook. This video of a big brawl at this restaurant in Jackson, Juicy Seafood. Rhino, did you see that video?
Like, yeah,
10
I've
women
seen
against
the video,
one security
and I've,
guy.
I've seen it attributed to Juicy Seafood. I've seen it attributed to La Salsa. I've seen it attributed to salsas. I've seen it attributed to a handful of different restaurants, and I haven't been able to confirm one or the other from looking at the inside of the restaurant and looking at the video, but. Yeah, that video's gone international now.
Yeah, it was a huge fight, and I'm not sure I've seen what may have started this. The reason I attribute it to Juicy Seafood, and I may be wrong, but the story I read in one of the papers from Jackson had the general manager asking for help, asking the public if you know who was involved, urging anybody with information about the brawl to contact Crime Stoppers. And was emphasizing their commitment to maintaining a welcoming environment and asked everybody in the community to continue to support the restaurant because, you know, you see a video like that and you may not want to go try that restaurant because you're concerned about what might happen. I mean, I think social media influences our decisions all the time today on where to go, who to patronize. We talked about a story a couple of weeks ago from the coast in a restaurant that posted something somewhat controversial to their social media. But have you ever run into a situation like this? We see videos a lot of times from places like Chuck E. Cheese or Showbiz Pizza where there seem to be fights. That's a weird place to have fights break out, but that seems to be a popular venue for fights to break out.
The last time I was in a food setting where a brawl broke out, it was back in high school. There was a wing place right next to a pool hall. So technically it didn't break out in the eatery. It kind of spilled over because they shared a hallway to a shared restroom. And a brawl broke out in the pool hall that made its way over to the wing place with pool cues and all. And that was an experience.
Oh, that's fun. That sounds fun. That's like something out of a movie. The strange thing about this video and that I noticed was that they have a security guard. And put the video aside, I'm not sure I want to go to a restaurant where they've got security in the middle of the afternoon, in the middle of the day. Now, you understand security guards are needed at bars and nightclubs, but if there have been incidents in the past that require a security guard at a seafood restaurant, that might be a red flag for me before I even walk in. Your thoughts on that? I'd love to see them on the CSPIRE text line, and we'll look at Hurricane Preparedness Week next. Middays with Gerard. I'm Scott Sands, Super Talk Mississippi.
This segment of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by Covington County Hospital in Collins, where your health matters.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Nicely done, Rhino. My name is Scott Sands, and for Gerard, Hurricane Preparedness Week underway. Of course, the Scorpions here on Super Talk Mississippi. Stephen McCraney is joining me. He's Executive Director at Mississippi Emergency Management. It's great to meet you. Thanks for coming on with me today. Can I call you Mac? Everybody seems to call you Mac.
Everybody calls me Mac. If you call the office, ask for Stephen. He's not there. So that's the way we rock with that.
I was talking to Rhino off air at the beginning of the show, and he told me that there's some possible flood warnings that could be in effect for the next couple of days. State's kind of been reeling from storms for the past couple of months, which, I mean, let's be honest, it's spring in the South. This is going to happen from time to time.
Absolutely.
How concerned are you about the new storms coming through?
You know, we look at everybody preps for certain things at certain times of the year, whether it's end of the SEC going into play. So April and May is our 2 months of spring weather. I mean, that is when the majority of our disasters have occurred, 19 in April and 11 in May. And then as soon as we get out of May, we roll down into, August, September, October, and we know what comes at that time of the year, the hurricane. So we've had a real good results of the Mississippi River. We've been chasing it since April the 2nd. Through the 6th, we had some severe thunderstorms in North Mississippi and Tennessee and everywhere else, and that just kind of filled the funnel and shot that water down the Mississippi River. But right now, the records that we reached, people are very, very well in tune with it in Warren County, Greenville, Natchez, and we've had some great outcomes from that so far. So we still got some capacity. I don't want to test. Mother Nature might want to test us, but I don't want to test it. But severe weather, these are the months. Be ready for that transitional type of severe weather that could get you a tornado at almost any moment, severe weather, hail, you name it.
And just as we get out of the spring storms, it's hurricane season. And I want to talk about FEMA's response to some of the storms that we've had so far this year. But let's start off with Hurricane Preparedness Week and how this week's priorities may differ from past years and how you prepare the state for the storm season.
Yeah, it's we've already started our training. We probably had – last year we had 12 training events for just hurricane season, and that is where you pull everything out of your tackle box. When you go fishing, you go, man, I wish I would have checked this before I went out on the boat, because now I don't have that lure that I need. So as we do that, we've already done that with the Mississippi National Guard. My team has traveled to Georgia to Region 4 FEMA. We're doing logistics, make sure we've got all that together, make sure we've got the water, the food, the pumps, anything, sandbags that we might need for this upcoming season. We'll continue with our partners in Mississippi, the emergency management directors down at the county level, and the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians. So it's a consistent. We've even had a training session with our Business Emergency Operations Center, bringing all those business partners in the state of Mississippi that are well entwined as to what they provide the public each and every day. So it's just a continuous each and every year, making sure you've got everything you need for when Mother Nature decides that one's coming in. And we don't necessarily have the crosswinds we had last year. You know, last year we had a lot of hurricanes that were kind of coming our way, but they just got chewed apart. So we're looking at a little bit less reliability on that this year. So I'm not asking for one, but we are going to be prepped and ready, and we'll be ready to move at a moment's notice.
I actually did not look at the predictions for this hurricane season, but they have not been accurate for the last few years. But what are you what are you planning for? What are you possibly expecting this season?
You know, they call it 18 possible that'll be out there. 11 will be hurricanes and 5 will be major. But as the past has taught us, one. All it takes is one for it to get inside. And we I'm actually going down to the coast here in a few days to at the Ground Zero Museum, and we're going to talk to people in that community to tell them to be ready. And my biggest thing is we've got a lot of new citizens in the state of Mississippi. A lot of them that have moved to the coast, moved to those areas that could be impacted dramatically. And that is the segment of the population I really want to get in touch with. Is one that's never, I don't want to say ride out a hurricane, but you've never been through one. Talk to you, and I get the neighbors, I get the citizens that are there. Talk to the newbies. Talk to the new ones that have moved in that just love the state of Mississippi and they wanted to move here and stay here. Let them know what that looks like, and also to have a plan for your family. Know where you're going to meet up. Know whose number is going to be the one that kind of takes that tally. Everybody's okay until you can come back into the area, because I remember Katrina, we shut it down for a long time, not letting anybody back into the communities, et cetera. And you've got to have that plan. And if you've got a pet, there are pet shelters out there, because a lot of people stay home because they can't bring their pets to a shelter. Hey, we've got them all over the state now, so make that plan early and get ready to take care of your neighbors, your elderly, your family. If you know those things, three things are good, it's going to be a better event.
You know, Mac, you talk about the big one. It is 20 years since Katrina. Yes. I was not there for Hurricane Katrina, although I've been back, and you still see the scars.
Absolutely.
Left from Katrina on the Gulf Coast, and historic landmarks, places that I loved going to high school on the coast, are gone. I did live through and worked through in radio during George's and Elena and a number of other storms that hit the coast. But it seems like the state, and it seems like many people who live along the coast, have taken a different approach to storms, especially since Katrina, because of how massive that storm was.
Right.
Many of us who normally would have rode it out on the coast, maybe south of the tracks, are now saying, "I'm getting out, going to get out of there."
Yeah, it's almost like that pothole you hit in the road. When it's way back there in your rearview mirror, you say you don't think about it as much. But that needs to resonate with everyone on the coast. Remember how tough those times were during Katrina. Don't put yourself in harm's way. Everybody who survived it, hey, we're here to make smart choices. Unfortunately, we have a lot of folks that didn't survive that storm. So make sure you, your family, your pets, everything that you've got. Look at the simple thing is medication. Do you have 7 to 14 days? I mean, we're going to bring in, if necessary, if it is tragic enough, we'll bring in the small pharmacies to be able to try to get you new stuff. But at least have your prescription bottle with you. Be ready to survive. We always say the first 72 is on you. Well, that's kind of good, but But the reason that's there is because about the first 24 to 36 hours, first responders, MEMA, and others, we're trying to do life safety. We're trying to respond out there. And there's a point in time, and I remember it being a first responder, the worst time of your life is when you get locked down because the winds are too high, almost like electrical crews. You can't get out there and do that thing that you want to do. You've been trained because you might lose that fire truck. You might lose that emergency response vehicle that you just can't replace. You can't get those things quickly, and life of a first responder. So we're itching to go. We're itching to get out there. But that's the reason we're trying to say that first 72 hours, about half of it's going to be burned up. We're trying to locate folks. We're trying to make those contacts and get them in a safe place.
So as you're planning, Mac, what do you recommend for people, especially on the coast, as they're planning where they may – how they may evacuate the coast? Do you recommend going inland, which could also be hit pretty hard by storms, as far north as certainly Hattiesburg and Meridian, but all the way up to Jackson and beyond?
Absolutely. Hattiesburg's population probably almost triples to quadruples. We send extra law enforcement down there to help in that city, and we're trying to push them further north. One, because the actual internal road system and everything else, when you quadruple that, and then we're actually making a plan with the energy providers, the fuel providers, that if you turn all the lanes north, then we've got to have another route to get down there to try to fuel those fuel stations and everything else. We've practiced this. We've got it on paper. We know what we're going to do. We know the extra time it's going to take the back road, so to speak, to be able to get to those locations. So we would rather people come further north. But then again, we'll actually start advertising that out. I mean, I'm watching these things as soon as something crops up. Maybe it's coming off the coast of Africa. We're watching them right then. And then we're waiting to see if any more dust-ups happen. But we're going to let you know if that thing is pushing across Mississippi and then going to go Louisiana, Texas, type, I'm not going to tell you to go that way. You know, I'll tell you east or west. It just depends upon which direction it's going to go. But have a simple plan in place. Here's my destination. This is where I'm going. Get your reservations. If you have pets, you need to come. I mean, we had a couple of years ago, we had, a horse, cow, and a goat at the trademark up there at the fairground. I'm like, what the heck we do with a goat? Well, the goat was actually
goat's gonna be fine.
The goat was a good animal for the horse that was actually there. They were partners, so they had to go together.
That's a Disney movie in the making.
Absolutely. Mac,
stick around for another second. The advice I take away from this is if you live on the coast, make sure you have friends in like Nashville or Birmingham or Atlanta, somewhere you can go for a few days.
Yeah, it's almost like Christmas weekend. Yeah, go stay for 3 days.
Emergency management. Let's talk about response and reaction to the tornadoes and maybe get into some insurance considerations as well. Middays with Gerard. I'm Scott Sands on Super Talk Mississippi.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside.
Gerard will be back tomorrow. My name is Scott Sands. Thanks for letting me hang out with you on Super Talk Mississippi. Got an eye on the markets this morning, and it looked like we tried to have a nice little run-up for a couple of hours. The Dow essentially at a break-even. NASDAQ is down 115, S&P down 27. Looks like a little bit of resistance. Of course, big news this week from the Fed, as they'll make an announcement on whether or not to cut any of the interest rates. Not likely to happen, but that will be news Wednesday afternoon. Stephen McCraney, Mac is joining us from Mississippi's Emergency Management Office. We were talking about hurricane preparedness week, and this question is about hurricanes, but kind of leads into a follow-up on FEMA's response to the tornadoes in Walthall County.
Right.
I know MEMA is encouraging homeowners to review insurance policies before hurricane season. You got any advice on what to ask about for adequate coverage, especially in some of the more flood-prone areas?
Yeah, you need to definitely have a copy of your policy. If you leave town, take it with you. That gives you the contact numbers to be able to get those individuals out there very quickly. And, of course, we'll formulate a team and an area kind of like we did in past disasters, and we'll create a point where everyone can go to if we get that type of event to the level of a hurricane. So just looking at what we've done, though, on the coast from Katrina, I mean, if you look at, you know, a Cat 1 storm would have shut the coast down for days, weeks, everything else. Now we've after Katrina, it's kind of like a testimony. I mean, we've rebuilt that area where the only cars that you get to see off other news media floating in the bottom of a casino or out of state cars. I mean, we know to park on the second, third, and fourth floor of the facilities down there. And that
should come with a welcome kit if you're moving to the coast for the first time.
If you're coming down there, don't go park in the garage. Park up in the garage. And so it's but it's a testament that within about 24 hours, all the businesses are back open. I mean, we've built up high. We've built them on stilts. We've fortified them, put a lot of mitigation money into the coast, the roads and everything else. So it's just a dynamic opportunity to look at what does good look like when you have an opportunity of Katrina, which is so devastating, but to rebuild it back better, build it back, make it more resilient, whether it's the water system, sewer treatment, electrical, and by getting those businesses to do the same thing to raise up. If you go down there and look at the shark's mouth, you know, where you go and get stuff, nothing's on the first floor. It's all on the second floor. And it just makes good sense to do that, to harden those things. So look at that insurance policy. If you pick one out today, you probably know it's about 60 or 90 days away before it's going to be in effect. There's going to be waivers on there. Make sure you read the fine print. Make sure you know what you're insuring, whether it's an out property, a building, what is the contents in that. So just a good full review with your insurance agency to really know, okay, if I lost the grand piano that was passed down through my family for years and years and years, is that covered? And, well, probably not. I mean, you just need to know the things you need to know and know what you're getting and what you're looking at coming back to.
So how is MEMA collaborating with FEMA and other federal agencies, National Weather Service, to get ready for hurricane season, but also the tornadoes and severe storms that come through the state?
Yeah, well, I'll just ring a bell on the insurance department, Mike Cheney. He and I are working together, whether it's the Storm Act that they're rebuilding roofs, trying to tie those things in harder. The insurance company, his office, we're hand in hand, whether it's floodplain, we work together on that. We just got cross filter through a lot of things because when disasters happen, a lot of insurance is involved. And he's got an open mic and his folks come over to the office, and we're staying on top of what does good look like, a response from the insurance side to our citizens of the state of Mississippi. And we don't want to leave anybody out. We open up call centers, the whole nine yards. So if you just be ready for any type of disaster right now. I mean, it is that time of the year. It's that time of the season where as we roll through our spring severe weather. It is on us as we speak. It will be here tomorrow, be sporadic, but somebody's probably going to get some tough straight line wind that can be worse than a small tornado sometimes. I mean, everything's not built to withstand that.
Well, Mac, you talk about not wanting to leave anybody behind. It's now been a month since Governor Reeves requested a major disaster declaration for the March tornadoes in Walthall County.
Right.
Any update on the status review from FEMA, and is there a timeline on when we might expect to see an approval or denial?
Yeah, well, I like to tell people, you know, I'm big on looking behind. See what happens, see how we progress through to the future. And our average on a federal declaration, it doesn't matter what president was in office, it doesn't matter what party might have been in charge at any given time. Probably the soonest I've gotten one was 24 days, and the max was about 37 days. And so I'm sitting right in the middle of the day, about 33 and a half to 34 days. And as we submitted our declaration as the rules and regulations were and are to us out there, the Stafford Act is kind of what guides all of that. How do you apply for assistance? How do you get that assistance? And what does it look like? So our threshold is about 5.6, almost 5.7 million, and I'm 18.5 million in damages. I'm well above it. I mean, I'm three times higher than the threshold thereof, and our homes, 763 affected homes, 233 destroyed, 208 major damage. My individual assistance numbers look very good as well, and I hate for them to look that good. I wish I could struggle with it, but this one hit. We did the damage assessments rapidly with the local emergency managers that came and helped the ones that didn't. The ones that didn't get hit, they came and they helped those others to look at every one of those houses. If I say 763, there was an emergency manager from the local level, there was a MEMA person and a FEMA person that went to every one of those residents, and that's how we do it. And then we kind of look at, say, who's insured and who's not. That comes into play. But we that declaration request on March 14, 15 is a solid major declaration request from the governor of the state of Mississippi to the president of the United States. And I'm looking forward to the phone call any minute. If my watch goes off, we might time out for just a second. So I'm waiting for the phone call at any minute for someone to tell me I've got that declaration. I'll be surprised.
So many people, Mac, are getting frustrated at this point after more than a month has passed.
Absolutely.
Ben in Tylertown wants to know if there's an estimate on when all the debris will even be removed.
Yeah, that's about $4.9 million worth of debris. And as soon as we can, since we get a declaration, that cost will be covered. And at the local level, we'll be able to get that moving and started. And, you know, in the meantime, you know, we do have our volunteer groups. I can't ring the bell for them enough.
I was actually about to ask about that because we're hearing great stories of the volunteers, the churches, the nonprofits. 8 Days of Hope, I saw a story about. Is that part of the plan now with MEMA to bridge the gap until federal aid is approved?
That has always been in our plan before, during, and after any storm, any type of disaster. We work with volunteer organizations after disasters, the Southern Baptist. They do a great job of cleaning up personal property, kind of getting that stuff to the edge of the road, and that's where we tell them to take it. Cajun Navy came up and did some great things this year. They're awesome. So you've got to leverage those groups because, you know, I always say government is probably the fastest snail in the race. But that doesn't mean the snail wins the race, but the snail will be there for a long time. And so we work with those volunteer organizations. We have a joint training together. We have conferences together to who can come in at what time. So we can actually not everybody the first week, because then 3 weeks later you're still going to need some assistance. But then we're bringing the housing groups and others and just leveraging at the local level as well. I tell people if you have an unmet need – call that local emergency management office in that county. If they don't have or if they don't have the volunteer group or whatever that can fill that void, then they're going to forward it up to me. We're on the same system where they put in a request, it goes straight into our office, somebody's looking at it right then.
So, Mac, I don't necessarily want to drag you into a political conversation here, but there's been conversations at a federal level about eliminating FEMA. Would you be able to respond faster if you didn't have that federal layer of bureaucracy, if the money was already in the state for you to disperse directly without having to go through the federal channels? Would MEMA do a better job of handling these crises?
That's a great question. I'm waiting on a federal declaration, but I'm also coordinating the response on a daily basis, anything that there is a need for. Now, how this thing is going to look on the backside, who knows? I mean, the great thing about what happened to us during Katrina is the state government, governor, lieutenant governor, those times, they created a disaster trust fund that allowed us the mechanism to respond and go, and they can put more money into it. I can go into, like, COVID. We were very responsive during it, so I don't get a blank check, but I do need to know that we can run the lane, and I think in the future, whatever decision's made, we're going to come back to the state. I'll advise the governor, and we need to have a session to talk about maybe a state heavily state-run program. We got to know what the rules are. Right now, the rules say I'm qualified for a federal declaration, and I'm waiting to receive it.
Mac, thanks for coming in. It's so nice to meet you.
Awesome.
Stephen McCraney, Mississippi Emergency Management. Follow them on all of the social medias and stay informed as we get ready for hurricane season in Mississippi. Scott Sands in for Gerard Gibbert on Super Talk Mississippi.
Hey, guys.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Hey there. Scott Sands in for Gerard. Middays with Gerard, and the C Spire text line is open, 601-879-4395. We'll tell you all about this real ID that goes into effect starting Wednesday across the country. Sean Tindall will join us next hour. Also, Bishop Kopasz from the Diocese of Jackson with what to expect when the next papal conclave begins. Rhino, do you know the bishop by any chance? Have you met the bishop?
Only in passing.
So, does he have a sense of humor?
He seems to, yeah.
So, Bishop Thomas, where I've been living, is a friend of mine, and every time he's been on my radio show here, I like to play a game with him called Heavy Metal Lyric or Bible Verse. Should I pull that out if time permits with the bishop, or should I let that one lie?
I don't know. Could be entertaining.
You get the concept of it, right? There are a lot of heavy metal bands that have some pretty intense lyrics. And let's be honest, the Bible has some pretty intense verses as well. So if I were to tell you, and I don't know if you're a heavy metal fan or if you're familiar with the Bible, Rhino, but if I were to say, if I whet my glittering sword and my hand take hold on judgment, I will render vengeance to my enemies and will reward them that hate me. Would you say that's a heavy metal lyric or a Bible verse?
Ooh, that sounds like a Bible verse. I couldn't tell you the book, though.
And you would be right. It's a Bible verse from Deuteronomy.
The glittering sword is what stood out to me.
That sounds very lyrical. I don't know if I should pull that out with the bishop. We'll see how it goes, maybe. We'll play that one by ear, I think. I'm not really sure where to go with that, but it might be fun. If he has a sense of humor. As we talk about the conclave, of course, over the weekend, the president shared a meme an artificially generated meme, an AI meme of him in the papal vestments, sitting as pope. He was asked at one point, who do you want to be the next pope? And he said, well, me. And he was joking. But whenever he makes a comment like that, whenever he says something like that, just like with the Trump 2028 hats, which he also addressed this weekend, people go crazy. The left just completely goes nuts. There was one poll I saw that said 87% of people do not think Donald Trump should be the next pope, but 6% said he should be. And I have questions about that 6%. We know that he's not going to be pope. We know that he probably doesn't want to be pope. But when he shares a meme like that, I get the joke. The president, if nothing else, is a master of trolling social media. And he does a remarkable, masterful job at that. And the critics just really come out of the woodwork. We saw Harry Sisson call him a man-child. Even a group of New York State Catholic Conference called the image mockery and said, there is nothing clever or funny about this image, Mr. President. The same people who are upset about this are often silent, though, when their side mocks religious values. And we've seen this. I saw a column by Dustin Grage on Town Hall that pointed out that the loudest critics are often atheists whose opinions carry little weight. Said the Pope picture is actually funny. Calm down, people. And Caroline Levitt, the White House press secretary, tried to set the record straight, saying that the president has respect for the Vatican and for the Pope. He flew to Italy to pay his respects for Pope Francis and attend his funeral. And he's been a staunch champion for Catholics and religious liberty. Trump, who now identifies as a non-denominational Christian, even recommended that Cardinal Dolan from New York would be a good pope, although he is not even in the running if you look at the Kalshi betting odds. And here's where I might draw the line, and you may have a difference of opinion with me. I'd love to hear your thoughts in the next few minutes before the bishop joins us next hour about that meme, about the meme of the Pope, about Donald Trump as Pope. I've got no problem with the president sharing that on his social media accounts because he's doing it to get people talking about him. He has said many times that there's no such thing as bad publicity. You're talking about Donald Trump, and he likes that. I did draw the line, and it's a very thin line here, when the White House account started to repost the memes. I think it's fair game on Donald Trump's personal accounts. The Jedi meme even, I don't know if you saw this one with a Sith lightsaber. When the White House gets involved from an official account, that's perhaps a line too far. I think the official White House account, the official accounts of the government, should project some sort of dignity, and I think you're risking a little bit of credibility with serious voters and with others when you start to cross that line on the official account. And of course, you risk alienating Catholic voters who shifted 10 points towards Republicans over the last 20 years. That could be a risky move politically. Where's the line? Did you see the humor in it as I did? And does the line get drawn on the official accounts? That's what I want to know on the C Spire text line here, and I'll read your comments next hour. The C Spire text line is open at 601-879-4395. Middays with Gerard Gibbert from the Element Studios on Super Talk Mississippi.
Of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher and president.
And now, another hour of the talk that keeps Mississippi talking. Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Begin your transition now.
Now on Super Talk Mississippi.
I think I need Rhino to put together a new playlist for me. Good stuff. Good days with Gerard Gibbert. I'm Scott Sands from the Element Wealth Studios. Sean Tindall is joining us, Commissioner for the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Sean, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for coming in today.
Glad to be here, Scott.
So I got questions about Real ID, and I know this is something that we've been working on for, what, 7 years now?
Yeah.
And I'm ashamed to admit that I still don't have my Real ID. I went to get one. Last time my driver's license was up for renewal and I forgot one piece of paperwork. So I just said, okay, I'll come back another time. And that was 4 or 5 years ago. So I've got to get this done. I know. Why do I need this? What's the difference in Real ID and a normal driver's license?
Well, Real ID was an initiative put out after 9/11 when, you know, there was a big push to make sure that all the states were compliant in using basically your driver's license as a form of identification so that basically we know you are who you say you are and try to stop, you know, folks coming across the border and stealing identification and particularly terrorists and using somebody's identification as a way of getting in this country and stealing, whether it's their finances or getting into places that they shouldn't be. So they instituted the Real ID program, and Mississippi was on the forefront of that. We were one of the first states to jump on getting with the compliance side of it. And really, we've done a really good job. I know it's been 7 years, but we're about 98% compliant. So you're in that very small minority that has not gotten their Real ID yet here in Mississippi. But I can tell you, I've got friends over in Alabama and other states, and it is a mad rush to try to get that Real ID done over there. And to the point that I was talking to somebody over there, and they have appointments 2 months out. And you can't get in. You can't even go to a driver service station in Alabama and actually print it. They do a central print. So even if you show up there, you got to wait 2 to 3 weeks to get your driver's license. Of course, in Mississippi, if you make an appointment, you can come in, get that Real ID, or you can renew it online and we'll mail it to you. If you can get us the documentation that's needed. But the goal there, again, is to make sure that people are who they say they are when they're flying, when they're doing transactions through the banks and other things, that this is a secure form of identification. And you know, glad to see Mississippi. We get a lot of bad raps on different things, but 98% compliance is a really, really good number to have. And then again, driver services, you look back 5 years ago, 3 hour wait times down to 15 to 20 minutes right now. If you make an appointment, it's even less. So our folks at the Driver Service Bureau have done just a tremendous job on turning that whole program around. And we have hiccups from time to time. Just a few months ago, we had a software glitch that created a major backlog for us that we had to work through over the next several months. But we're back on track now.
Yeah, so with a 98% compliance rate, that's very impressive. So there aren't many people left in the state who don't have a real ID. What's the difference in the required documents? Because if I remember when I went in a few years ago, I may have been missing either my Social Security card or my birth certificate and had to request it. I may have to request it again. I know that I did. Now it's been 4 years, and I'm not sure where I put it then. It should be in a safe. I realize I'm not. I'm breaking all the rules on identification, I'm sure. But there are stricter document requirements, and you've got to bring in like 6 or 7 different things, if I remember correctly.
I don't think it's quite that many. Really, you got to bring in 2 different forms of identification. So a Social Security card and birth certificate will be fine. It might be that you have a passport, you know, other forms of identification that we can use. So most people, it's their Social Security card and their birth certificate, and bring that on in. Some people... you might not have a real ID, but you might have already submitted that information to us. So we might already have it on file. We just need to update your driver's license. So, you know, there are some different scenarios depending on when the last time you actually renewed your driver's license and when you got your driver's license. You know, might depend on those 2 factors on what type of information that you need to bring in. I got my license back in 1987, so I'm revealing my age a little bit there. 87, 88, I think. So, you know, I doubt they had my birth certificate and Social Security card from that time. So I had to bring in a little bit more information.
I got mine in 85 or 86, and I got my fake ID in 83 or 84. But you don't need to know that.
Easy.
I think the statute of limitations has passed on that, Sean. So why is it – what additional measures – and this is a great question from Mike and Madison. What additional safety measures does the real ID provide if you're traveling? How is it different than a normal identification that already required documentation and proof of ID to get your driver's license?
Well, and that's it. I mean, you're also – I think we've done a pretty good job in Mississippi for a while getting that type of documentation. But every state had different processes and different information that was required. And look, we get pushes every now and then. You know, what about homeless people when they need to get a driver's license? They don't have copies of their birth certificate. They don't have copies of their Social Security cards. And, you know, it's kind of hard to tell people no sometimes. But other states would go ahead and say yes. And so it was relatively easy to go in and get a driver's license. Oh, you say you're Billy Bob, then Billy Bob, here's your driver's license. And so it really wasn't a very secure form of ID depending on what state you were in. And so the goal is to create a standard across all 50 states where, again, people are who they say they are when they get those driver's licenses. And I think we've done a pretty good job in Mississippi for a long time with that. Other states, not so much. So it was a little bit easier to get a state-issued ID that might have the wrong credentials on it. And so when that happens, there's a whole host of issues, whether it's identity theft, whether it's somebody getting on a plane like a terrorist, and you don't know who's actually flying on that plane. So the goal is to create a standard across all 50 states where those driver's licenses are a secure form of ID, one in which, again, the people are who they say they are, and we know who we're dealing with.
So most of the IDs that have been issued in recent years have been real ID, I've got to assume. I mean, if you were missing one form of document, as I was, then maybe you just got a regular driver's license. But several people want to know how you can tell if you've got a real ID. It's a gold star on the driver's license,
that's
correct?
It. Very simple. So if you look on your driver's license and it's got that gold star in the top right corner, you're going to be able to fly. You're going to be able to get on a plane and go wherever you need to. If you don't have that and you are traveling, you've got a passport, you can still bring your passport and you'll be fine. But if you don't have that on your driver's license, I highly encourage you to come in, find out what kind of documentation you're going to need and bring it. bring those forms of ID, Social Security card, birth certificate, and let's update it in our system and get that gold star on your driver's license so you can travel wherever you need to. If you're not flying on a plane, it doesn't really matter. I mean, you can get by without it. But if you're planning on doing any sort of traveling, you need to go ahead and do it. And even some of the banks now are starting to require that real ID. So it's a good idea to go ahead and come and get it. But you don't have to. It's still a valid driver's license. But that gold star is going to let everybody know that that is a real ID and it's confirmed identity.
And it will be required to fly domestically. If you're going to drive across to Canada or Mexico, I believe you also need the real ID. It can't be forged. Canada, it's not anything that would be easy to forge. Not that I would be encouraging that by any means.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes to forgeries, there are people that are pretty sophisticated that can do all kinds of stuff. So yeah. I'm not going to say that that's against the realm of possibility. I think that's out there. And to that end, what I would encourage folks to do is download our Mississippi Mobile ID app. Which is an app that you can carry your identification on your phone. It's actually more secure than a physical ID. It requires facial recognitions. It goes through our state system so that if somebody shows you their ID on their phone, it's 100% not a fake if they're using the Mississippi Mobile ID app. So you can verify it with that. But yeah, it's a good thing. It's a great step in the right direction. And again, I think it's a safety issue, and I think it's a security issue, and I also think it's trying to prevent fraud and identity theft issue.
So if you're planning to fly after Wednesday and you don't have the real ID yet, and what happens if you don't have a passport? Are there any other alternatives available to fly?
No, I think those are going to be your two alternatives, to have a real ID or have some sort of passport. And other than that, you're probably going to be turned away at the gate, and you're going to have spent $500 to $1,000 on a plane ticket, and nobody wants to do that. So come on in. You can set an appointment or you can do a walk-in. Again, our average wait times are down significantly across the state. And down on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, we actually have a driver service station at the Gulfport Municipal Airport where, if you're flying out and it's an emergency, that's why we put it there, is people that were flying we knew might have some issues. They can go down there and get it. We also have a mobile ID station right now where we've taken a van and converted it into a driver service station so that we can go all over the state. And we plan on hitting some of the airports in different locations as this goes into effect to make sure that if people need it, they can get it.
I got 6 weeks before I'm planning to fly into Gulfport Biloxi International, so I need to get my real ID done very, very soon, it sounds like, with all of the proper documents this time around. Sean Tindall from the Department of Public Safety, thank you so much for coming in. This is a big deal, and Mississippi has been ahead of the curve in getting implementation of the real ID done. So congratulations. Great job.
Thank you, sir.
Super Talk Mississippi continues. It's Middays with Gerard. I'm Scott Sands.
With Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
The blues has got a hold of me. Middays with Gerard. He'll be back tomorrow. I'm Scott Sands in the Element Wealth Studio. C Spire text line 601-879-4395. A lot of questions about the real ID, and I don't want to give you the wrong information because I've gone to get mine, and I didn't have everything I needed. So check the DPS website for the documents that you need. But I'm pretty sure it's Social Security card, birth certificate, and two proofs of residency. If you've got a passport, that might work. It will work. A passport will be accepted if you're trying to fly and don't have a real ID yet. My problem is, Rhino, I mean, I'm more than 50 years old. I've still got my original Social Security card, and I wasn't sure where it is. They give it to you on, like, the thinnest piece of paper when you're born and expect you to hold on to that for the rest of your life. And I realize I should have a nice, secure safe or a lockbox somewhere where I keep important documents like that, but I'm failing as an adult, and I did not do that. But I did finally find my original Social Security card. So I've got that and the birth certificate. My driver's license is up in June with my birthday, so I've got it timed properly. It just sounds like I should probably go in early to get that done, especially if in some states there are wait times, like you mentioned with Alabama. But it seems like Mississippi has done a really good job. Also, what's fun, do you have your original Social Security card that you were issued as a baby?
I do, but I fear it was likely considered null and void by the federal government because it has explicit instructions on there not to laminate it.
That's right. Yes, they give it to you on the thinnest piece of paper and tell you not to do anything to laminate or protect that thin, fragile piece of paper. Mine must not have been from when I was a baby, maybe when I first started to work, because I signed it. And to look at the difference in my signature over the years is, I find humorous, because I had apparently really nice penmanship at one point in my life that has since gone away. maybe that should be something much easier to replace as well. I know I had to call Mobile Infirmary, to get my birth certificate. I had lost my birth certificate years ago, and to get a copy of that, it was a relatively easy process. But you have to prove who you are and why you need your birth certificate to get that replaced. Whatever hospital, it was a Mobile Infirmary, one of the hospitals in Mobile, whatever the Catholic hospital is in Mobile. I had to do that a few years ago. And now, as I'm sitting here thinking, I've got to get the real ID, I've got to find that again. And some people on the C Spire text line are carrying around their Social Security card in their wallet, which I would not do. Everything that I've put in my wallet ever has been torn up or lost or misplaced. So that's for me, that's not the safest place to keep it, in my opinion. It sounds like Mississippi has done a pretty good job of implementing the Real ID, with less than 2% who haven't switched over to this yet. But if you're going to fly, you're planning to drive into Mexico or Canada and don't have a passport, you will need a Real ID starting on Wednesday. Also starting Wednesday is the conclave. We'll talk to the bishop from Jackson about what to expect and how this process is going to work, something that I'll be watching because I'm kind of a nerd, and this is really kind of a historic event, that this will only be the third or fourth papal conclave of my lifetime. Over the weekend, and I heard Richard talking about it this morning, President Trump unveiled a plan to reopen Alcatraz, the San Francisco prison that at one point held America's most dangerous criminals, on a post on Truth Social. He declared that the revitalized facility will house the nation's most violent offenders, restoring a sense of security for law-abiding Americans. He said, "Far too long, America has been plagued by vicious, violent, and repeat criminal offenders, the dregs of society, who will never contribute anything other than misery and suffering." So he directed the Bureau of Prisons, the DOJ, FBI, and Homeland Security to rebuild and expand Alcatraz, equipping it to detain the worst of the worst. It's been closed now since 1963. They had actually planned to close Alcatraz even before Frank Morris and the Anglin brothers escaped. And by the way, I was bored last night going to bed, so I watched Escape from Alcatraz on Netflix. Have you seen that movie?
It's the one with Clint Eastwood?
Film. Yeah, that's the one with Clint Eastwood.
Oh, yeah. It's been years, but I remember watching it on Turner Classic or AMC or something like that at one point.
I don't know that there's any way that Morris and the Anglin brothers could have escaped successfully. I believe they got beyond the prison walls. They may have gotten into the channel, but that swim in those cold shark-infested waters, it's I think at least a 2 or 3 mile swim through pretty heavy currents. Even with the raft that they reportedly had made, I don't see how they made the escape successfully. Maybe I'm wrong about this. I mean, it's been a legend. I've seen some of the shows on the History Channel about whether or not they made it. I don't see how they could.
I put at least a little bit of credence into the scientific method of the Mythbusters because
right, the Mythbusters. You're right, the Mythbusters did it. Yes,
they did it, and it's not like they're superhumans. So they admit that when they do feats of strength and stuff, they're like, "We're just average Joes trying this out," and they managed to pull it off. Although they do have a long storied career in prop making and manufacturing,
right.
That likely helped them make that raft a little bit more sturdy and sound than prisoners would have. But still, it was plausible. I think is what they labeled it was plausible. I don't think they confirmed it as a myth.
No, I can't remember either what they determined, but they were able to do it. So there is a small chance, perhaps, that they could make it. But after all these years, I mean, with any good conspiracy theory, and I love to fall down these rabbit holes from time to time, you would think after so many years, after 5 decades, that their true identity, if they did survive, would have come out somewhere at some point.
Well, it could be like D.B. Cooper, where there's about 5 different people it could be.
And they're very close, I think, to identifying D.B. Cooper. I fell into that rabbit hole a few weeks ago myself. What I love about the idea of reopening Alcatraz is the symbolism involved, a clear message to criminals that violent behavior would face consequences. And perhaps it could be a type of Gitmo in American territory, where some of these criminal gangbangers who have come into the country illegally could be sent. If judges are going to block deportations, send them to Alcatraz. But the problem I have is we don't know how much this would cost. It's got to cost a fortune to reconstruct Alcatraz, to modernize it, to bring it up to code. Even minimal codes, I think, would make it cost prohibitive. And the operational costs, which is why originally they were going to shut Alcatraz down, operating a prison on an island like that became just simply too costly and complex. Supply issues, the budget concerns made it more of a burden on the DOJ budget to operate, at least as I understand this. And there's a limited number of people, even if you expand it, that Alcatraz could hold. So I love the concept of it, and I think this may be one of those things that President Trump likes to throw out to start a conversation and to get people talking. But as a reality, I don't know that it actually happens. I think it would probably be less expensive. And again, I don't know the numbers to build a new high security detention facility than to completely reconstruct and rebuild Alcatraz. But as a concept, I love it. I love the imagery, the symbolism that would be involved in this. And I can't wait to read some of the comments about this on the CSpire text line. I think Richard may have come to some of the same conclusions this morning. I heard part of his conversation today on Super Talk Mississippi. It's a place I would love to visit. Just the history of Alcatraz and the criminals that were there and what they went through with life on Alcatraz, even if it's just a fraction of the reality portrayed in the movie or in an even better movie about Alcatraz, The Rock. The return to Alcatraz when the terrorists took control of the island and Sean Connery broke back into Alcatraz with the special forces. To stay there at night even and the ghost stories from Alcatraz would be quite an experience. But
do you subscribe to the fan theory that The Rock is actually an unnamed sequel to the Sean Connery Bond films?
Yes, I think I have to. I know exactly the storyline that you're talking to, but yes, I have seen that fan theory, and it absolutely makes perfect sense. I wish they had made some sort of script reference to 007 in The Rock. That would have been classic. And I think I heard Richard Cross talking about that, you know, having Nicolas Cage reprise some role in a new Alcatraz. In a new Alcatraz remake. Your thoughts on that on the CSpire text line, as well as what you thought of the president sharing the memes of him as the next pope. Is he just trolling? Do you think he's serious? Do you think the criticism is founded? CSpire text line is open. We'll talk to the bishop from the Jackson Diocese about the papal conclave, which is set to begin Wednesday next year on Super Talk Mississippi. Scott Sands, you can find me on X, by the way, at Scott Sands Media.
From the Spring It On! Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on!
On Super Talk Mississippi.
How y'all doing? Great to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me to sit in for Gerard Gibbert today. Middays with Gerard from the Element Wealth Studios. My name is Scott Sands. Bishop Joseph Kopasz from the Diocese of Jackson is joining me now. The conclave set to begin Wednesday. Bishop, thank you for your time. Thanks for coming on. Even though I'm a lapsed Catholic, I admit every time I talk to Bishop Thomas here in the diocese I'm in, I always feel the need to say, forgive me, Father. It's been a long time since my last confession.
Well, in the blink of an eye, God could take care of that from eternity. So no problem.
I feel like if you have me read a few rosaries, say a few rosaries, that I'll be good to go at the end of the day.
It's a good start.
I was educated by the Jesuits at Spring Hill College in Mobile, so I'm going to rely upon that education to talk with you about the conclave set to begin Wednesday. This is really an historic event. Even if you're not Catholic, this is a fascinating process to watch. This will be, I think, the fourth or fifth conclave of my lifetime, although I only remember the last couple. Let's just start by explaining what's about to take place at the Vatican.
You're right. It's an historic moment, and it captures the imagination of people who aren't Catholic and Catholics. But it is at the center of the news, certainly these days. And the conclave gathers all of the cardinals from around the world, and there are 130 who are eligible to vote in this conclave. There are those older than 80, but they cannot vote. So they come from around the world, and it's an amazing gathering because some have been cardinals for a long time, others just recently. There are blocks of cardinals who know one another, but there are those who have never met each other. And they come together and settle into what will begin on Wednesday formally, but they have been in Rome since the Pope's funeral. So they've had a chance probably to get acquainted or to, be with friends they've known for years and to begin those conversations and the prayer together and get themselves ready, for the big gathering. It's like the Super Bowl.
Since they began to gather, since they met for the funeral, has there been politicking going on behind the scenes? Is it like the movie Conclave, if you've seen that?
Well, there's got to be an element of that, but I would think that a lot of it, again, is just the conversations that take place. Some have maybe been in school with each other 40 years ago, 50 years ago, so having a chance to really catch up and, trusting in the work of the Holy Spirit, one hopes that prayer is more central to even the conversations than politicking, but there are naturally different blocks of cardinals who would like to see the Francis vision of the church continue. Not that that was a rupture in any way, but still that more progressive vision. Others, would be of a different mindset in ecclesiology. So in that sense, there would be certainly interesting dynamics.
And you would think, and this is one of the elements of the conclave this year that make it so interesting, you would think that there's a likelihood that the policies that Francis put forth during his papacy would continue. I believe 108 of the 133 cardinals who will be voting in this conclave were appointed by Francis, which would lead you to believe, perhaps, that they will be of a similar mindset to Francis.
Yes, and that, so when you're looking at that, yeah, there is definitely a vision of the church that is, like Francis, deeply rooted in the needs of the modern world. But, when he was elected, he was elected for, following Pope Benedict and Pope St. John Paul II, and they had selected, the vast majority of the cardinals. So they would have been cardinals that certainly at the heart of the church, but of the, you know, of the vision of the church of Pope Benedict and St. John Paul, and they elected Francis. And so it's really, and again, not that Francis in any way broke from any significant traditions, but he, as we know, looked at the world and said, we need to preach the gospel in ways that are, that the modern world can hear, and what are the needs of the modern world. And that was a surprise when you look at it, I would think. You would think, well, they're going to elect the most conservative or traditional. That didn't happen, you know. So, but still, it seems the cardinals representing 90 countries, that's incredible, from around the world, will be looking at the world differently than in the past when many came from the, you know, the Northern Hemisphere or Europe.
I was going to ask about the geography involved in this conclave. It's one of the most geographically diverse conclaves that we've ever seen. I believe that Europeans make up less than 50% of the voting cardinals. Normally, you would say, and I believe that there are two or three Italian cardinals who are leading the betting, which we may get into, Bishop. But it's highly likely that we won't see an Italian cardinal elected in this conclave.
It's probable that, yeah, that we will not. You know, although, for example, Cardinal Farrelin, who's the Secretary of State, is certainly prominent among the cardinals because that's such a very important ministry and, you know, position in the church. But that does not guarantee and, really anything. It's
and
a broader
he's got 29% of the money on the Cardinal yeah. Parolin has about 29% of the money on the Kalshi betting app. If you're followed by Cardinal Tagli from the Philippines, who I think has an inside track. If my money were to go on one, and is it okay for me as a lapsed Catholic to wager on the papacy?
Well, I don't know if that's sacrilegious or not, but people are, you know, these days, yeah, there are odds on just about everything. So
people will bet on anything.
If it's a friendly wager, you know. You're right. You know, when Pope Benedict was elected after St. Pope John Paul II, you know, one of the reasons was because so many cardinals knew him and knew him well, and he served them well when they came to Rome, and he was always really just there for them and, you know, took care of many, many, you know, issues that would be present in the church. So they were, you know, they just, when they gathered in prayer and in conference and conclave, they it happened within a matter of a day or two. You know, Pope Benedict was elected. So it's possible, again, the Italian presence in Rome could be a factor. But, you know, surprised by the Holy Spirit, we'll see. You know, this again, there's such diversity of representation and countries involved. 90, that's amazing.
We're talking to Bishop Joseph Kopasz from the Diocese of Jackson here on Super Talk Mississippi. Let's go through the process. I don't think we could expect to see a pope elected on Wednesday. How many votes will they do on a daily basis? And what do you imagine? What have you heard that sequestering process in the Sistine Chapel is like?
It's in the last century, especially. It's consistent. You know, the Sistine Chapel is visited by countless people throughout the year, day in and day out. And so, at a certain point, decided at that point the chapel is to be vacated. So the people leave, and I believe that's the day before, and then the cardinals gather, and the you know, in conclave, various cardinals could be asked to speak for 5 minutes or so, and not everyone will take that opportunity, but there will be a number of them who do. So they get to pray together, to you know, listen to a particular Cardinal's vision, you know, of the church, where we need to continue to go. And, you know, so that gives Cardinals a chance to settle in together. And then they vote one at a time. They come up and place their ballot in the urn. And there are three who are there to make sure, you know, it's properly placed and then counted. And a two-thirds majority is needed, so likely not on the first day. But there are two votes, likely, again, because you're there for 8 hours, say. So that allows time for two votes. But typically it could well happen the second or third day, because now you're honing down to a few cardinals who are gathering more and more votes. And so if a cardinal, at a certain point, a cardinal realizing that
Bishop, we're up against a hard break here. Would you like to stick around for our final segment? Do you have a few more minutes?
Oh, sure. No problem.
Bishop Joseph Kopasz from the Diocese of Jackson here on Super Talk Mississippi. I'm Scott Sands.
Poly up a minute.
Are we going to do this?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
The eyes of the world will be on the Vatican starting Wednesday as the conclave convenes to elect a new pope to replace Pope Francis. Bishop Joseph Kopasz from the Diocese of Jackson is joining us now on Super Talk Mississippi. It's Middays with Gerard. He'll be back tomorrow. My name is Scott Sands. Bishop, the ceremonies involved, if you've seen Conclave or any of the other numerous movies about the papacy, you know there's a lot of ritual involved. What is the purpose of the solemnity of these kind of ceremonies?
They are so rich in tradition, and you know, they're maintained. Pope Francis changed a few, even these sacred robes that he wore. He simplified when he came out to be presented to the world as the next pope. So the although they're not, you know, they are traditional and they can be changed, a lot of them are maintained. Like this conclave is 800 years old, this format. So I think that's fascinating to many in the world, how that kind of tradition can keep going forward, even in light of all the changes in our modern world. So the, you know, when the Pope is selected, naturally the white smoke, the bells will sound. He'll be introduced. He'll have selected his name, which is very significant. Pope Francis chose, you know, Francis as following St. Francis. So all of those parts of it, rich in symbolism and ritual.
So as of today, the leading candidates on some of the wagering apps would be Cardinal Parolin of Italy. Turkson of Ghana is getting more money on him. Cardinal Tagli from the Philippines and Pete Zabala from Italy. Also Cardinal Zuppi from Italy. Those are the top five or six cardinals in the running. It's interesting when you look at the makeup of the College of Cardinals, because there is a conservative lean to the cardinals, but as I was mentioning earlier, more than 100 of them were appointed by Francis to their to the current position. So that will be the interesting political aspect of this to watch as the conclave begins.
And even within the conclave, because it's secretive, you know, until the final announcement, right. But within the cardinals themselves, there'll be surprises, because they'll be because so many don't know one another personally. It will be interesting to see how the Holy Spirit moves, and all of a sudden the first vote, and it's like, where did that person come from? You know,
Do you think, Bishop, that the cardinals will be looking for a younger pontiff?
Oh, good question. You know, sometimes the speculation is not too young, because you're going to be there a long time. So what's the ideal age? For example, the cardinal in Mongolia is in his 40s. I don't think he's going to be the next pope. But I think they, just by the the age of most of the cardinals is going to be someone in their 60s. Pope Francis was 74 or 5, probably younger than that, maybe in the mid to late 60s.
Provide some stability to the church leadership moving forward. Sure. Is perhaps what they may be thinking.
Sure. I think so. You know, Pope Francis had 12 years. You know, that's a good long time.
Bishop, I've debated all morning whether or not to ask you if you would like to play this game. Bishop Thomas, who's become a friend of mine, will play this with me on my show here from time to time. If you're game for this and you can say no, would you like to play a couple of questions of heavy metal lyric or Bible verse?
I'd probably be more familiar with the Bible verse.
Right. So I'll give you a line, and you tell me if you believe it's a heavy metal lyric or a Bible verse. There are no prizes.
Okay.
So the line is, "And I will fill his mountains with his slain men, in your hills and in your valleys and in all of your rivers shall they fall that are slain with the sword."
That sounds like a few verses from the Old Testament, Bible verse.
Yeah, you would be correct. That's from Ezekiel 35. One more fact real quick. Well done.
Okay.
Their slain shall also be cast out, and their stench shall rise up out of their corpses, and their mountains shall be melted with their blood.
Yes, indeed. That's Bible verse, too.
You're correct. That's Isaiah 34. Well done.
Okay.
Bishop Kopasz, thanks for playing along. I appreciate your time, sir, and we'll be watching the conclave intently from a historic and a religious perspective starting Wednesday.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Take care.
Pray for all of us. Thank you, Bishop. Bishop Kopasz from the Diocese of Jackson. I'm actually surprised you played along, Rhino, although he may never come on with me again. So we'll see. It's Cinco de Mayo. Where are you heading for a margarita or a taco later?
Oh, there's a Mexican place right by my place, so I'll make my way there at some point today.
I want to try a Michelada. I think I've had one in Mexico before. That's the beer and tomato juice. Sounds very refreshing.
I imagine it would be an acquired taste.
Thank you for letting me sit in for Gerard. He will be back tomorrow. This is Middays with Gerard from the Element Wealth Studios, Fox News and Super Talk Mississippi News, coming up at the top of the hour. You can find me on X and social media, The Scott Sands Show, or at Scott Sands Media on X. Have a great Wednesday.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.